on environment for April 5th, I believe.
May.
May 5th. Hello. April Fool's.
Yeah.
And we will, I think we'll go straight to the 2948, HB 2948.
And how are we doing?
Yes, we do. Open a hearing on 2948. Work session on 2948.
Well, we have three people.
We've got to do a hearing first, don't you?
This has already been heard.
Yeah.
Oh, so
that was
required. This is a work session. Did any of you present in the hearing that we had a month and a half ago? Y'all did. Okay. I think we will just move right to working the bill.
Mr. Chair, if I might, we do have dash one amendments to the bill. It essentially replaces all of the new language in the bill with different language. The new amendment language is designed to address two issues that came up during the initial hearing on the bill. One of those was whether the change in the law allowing certain orders of DEQ to go to a circuit court, whether that would apply in an instance involving the action related to a permit. If you will look at lines 2, 3, and 4 of the Dash 1 amendments, what that language does is create an exception that says that the intent is that this new change in the law would not apply to a permit, essentially. One of the other issues that came up with regard to the bill was the issue of if you allow these orders to be appealed to the circuit court in which the land is located related to the action, that in some instances the land owner may be located some distance away from where the land actually is. So if you look at lines 6, 7, 8, and 9 of the proposed amendment, what it essentially says is that the petitioner may petition either the circuit court in which the petitioner resides, the circuit court in which the petitioner may have their principal business office, or the circuit court in which the land is actually located.
Right. All right.
So they can pick and choose three places.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they can.
A little flexibility. Would you like to come and just summarize?
Just real briefly.
Okay. State your name for the record.
Jim Evans from Multnomah County. Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. This dash here clarifies some issues that were brought up. Really, this boils down to a separation of powers to allow the judiciary to have an adequate ability to review and to have the persons involved in it understand that and to have additional relief potential. And that would be it.
Okay. Question.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. This came up long enough ago that I need to ask a couple of review questions.
Sure. Would you like to have?
Well, I'm not sure who to ask them of, so let me ask them into the air, and maybe whoever. You decide who answers. The first question I have is, what has happened to this language in the part that's being repealed having to do with staying in order of the commission, giving due consideration to the public interest in the continued enforcement of the commission's order? Is that language simply gone now, or is it somewhere else in the statute so it's superfluous here, or what?
So I read it, it's gone.
Yeah. Okay.
John, do you have a
comment? And then the other question I have is, who has the jurisdiction now? How does it work now? Which circuit court is conferred with jurisdiction under the current law?
There is no jurisdiction for the circuit court at this point.
Oh, that's right. It goes to the Court of Appeals,
right,
doesn't it?
On a paper record.
And since that's a statewide court, you don't have to worry about that issue. Okay. Thank you. That answers
my question. If I'm right, Mr. Chair?
Representative Miller.
We received communication from the Department of Justice earlier on this bill, in which they say that under current law, under existing law, some EQC orders are reviewed by county circuit courts, and others are reviewed directly by the Court of Appeals. So that's the circumstance in current law.
Can be. Some, as I read this, this can be requested, and any review could be heard by the circuit court. Is that your understanding?
In regards to DEQ enforcement actions for violation of DEQ regulations in terms of pollution or non-satisfactorily regulated, like an underground storage tank as an example.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Does this bill have a subsequent referral to judiciary or somewhere else that's used to dealing with these kinds of issues?
I don't think so.
I don't think so, no. Or ways and means, or
no, it has no substantive
referral. All right, I want to let it be known that I'm going to be a no vote on the bill, and I think the reasons are encompassed in the questions that I've asked.
Okay. All right. Any other comments for any of the folks in the audience? Just state your name for the record, please.
Jesse Lott, American Veterans Conference. Yes, Mr. Chairman, this bill is a people bill. It's not a government bill. Right now, the way it stands, an individual that has a, say the DEQ fines them $500, $1,000. The appeal is within the executive branch, except going into the appellate court. So if you had a $5,000 fine that you knew you corrected, the executive appeals within the system is the only place you can go, and you know good and well you cannot spend $10,000 to go into the appellate court. So what has happened here, all these years, they've gone along and they violated the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States because you don't have a due process clause. And we just let them get away with it. I've heard some of the remarks from the judiciary, from the Attorney General and them's office about, well, we don't have the resources. That doesn't make any sense to me for the simple reason the individual right I hear overrides a executive right. Mm-hmm. And so that's all I wanted to say on it. It's a people bill. It's not an executive bill. Thank you. Any questions?
You would have due process by going through the appeals court, would you not?
But you're not going. You can't afford it, Mr. Chairman. See, the cost factor to go from the administrative judge to the appeal court, and you got 21 separate copies made of your case. But now everybody else goes into circuit court, and then if they have to, then they appeal it from circuit court into the appellate court. So what has happened with the DEQ bill, it has eliminated your due process to go into an actual judge that's a lawyer that knows the law, not an administrative judge. They're not lawyers. If they are, it's one or two of them out of a thousand, but they're just contractors. And they are paid, by, of course, by the DEQ. So what we're saying is, give an individual a fair chance to appeal it into a circuit court where it can be legally determined, and then if it's not, then an individual can go into the appellate court as normal. I mean, that's the way the system is supposed to work. But
thank you. I think I saw a hand in the back. Did you want to come in? Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Larry Knutson. I'm an Assistant Attorney General representing the Environmental Quality Commission and the Department, and I'm here testifying at the request of the Department today. I previously submitted written testimony, which you have on file. I won't resubmit that, but I have copies if you would like them. In that testimony, you'll see that I raised three legal issues, one involving uncertainties and complications that I believe are created when you try to graft if I can back up for a second. Currently, the Administrative Procedures Act that applies to all agencies, or most agencies at least, has two different systems, one for contested case hearings and the review of those hearings. And there you have an administrative law judge that makes the record, reviewed by the Environmental Quality Commission, and then goes to the Court of Appeals. And then there's another set of procedures for non-contested case orders, and those go to the circuit court for a trial. The circuit court makes a record, and then that record is reviewed by the Court of Appeals. This bill, for one class of decisions, DEQ enforcement decisions, would attempt to meld those two together. And if I could use an analogy, in my mind, it's like two relatively complicated machines we're going to graft together, and the gears aren't necessarily going to mesh. And so there are a lot of uncertainties about how this process will work. And I can go into those now if you'd like, but they are in my previous testimony, so unless there's a request, I'll pass on that. The bill, the amendments that were proposed do not address this first issue. They do address a second issue, and that was whether or not this bill would apply to DEQ permits. And they address in part some of the issues related to the third issue, which was the venue question about orders and where they are appealed. And very briefly, DEQ does have a number of orders that are orders and other than contested cases, and some that are contested case orders. Under the existing law, in a provision that's not amended here, non-contested case orders are reviewed either in Marion County or in the county where the person seeking review resides or has its principal place of business. This amendment, the most recent amendments, would address that and bring that closer to what the APA provides, although there still is a distinction that the case could not be brought in Marion County, even if that was the wish of both parties. And the only reason I bring that up is that traditionally Marion County has had judges who are considered to be experts in administrative law, and sometimes there's been a desire to have them done there. Briefly, a couple of other questions. This is the procedure used by all other or most other agencies, the existing procedure. I'm confident that it does not violate the 14th Amendment, as discussed previously. There is an opportunity to present evidence to cross-examine witnesses. There is review by the Court of Appeals. The only other point I would mention is, at least I'm not aware of any data that would establish that it is more expensive to take an appeal to the Court of Appeals than to take a case through the circuit court. I know that's seems to be a fundamental basis for this bill, that it's somehow too costly for these folks to take cases to the Court of Appeals. And under the current system, a person, in fact, doesn't even have to have a lawyer to take the administrative, to go through the administrative hearing. And then they have the right to review by the EQC. Again, there's no requirement for a hearing or for an attorney. And then they go to
question.
Well, I don't know if the question as much as a comment, but that I understand that in the administrative procedures, administrative law judge, you don't have to have an attorney, when you go there. But I also recognize, and I think we all do, that the agency or the state is either represented there by an attorney or by a member of the agency who has been there before and for that particular type of purpose has probably as much background as most attorneys would have in the area. So the fact you don't have to have one, you're still somewhat at a disadvantage in that particular arena, in my opinion. And having had constituents and dealt with several of those cases, I think it certainly is, could be borne out that that was the case. And that's just an observation. Mm-hmm. It's not a question for you know, as much as it is just an observation.
Experience. Representative Bernhardt.
Yeah, I think the testimony we just heard really illustrates the point I was trying to make in my question about subsequent referral. We have a certifiably smart judiciary committee that's used to dealing with these kinds of issues. I have purposely asked the speaker every time not to be on the judiciary committee. I don't think this committee is a good substitute for the judiciary committee when dealing with this sort of an issue. And that's part of the reason for my no vote is because I want to be extremely cautious about getting involved in the kinds of questions where we're being asked to address through a peephole a tiny part of the landscape of a much, much larger set of issues without knowing about those issues. And that worries me a great deal. The Judiciary Committee is charged with knowing that stuff, or at least exploring the background much further than we're going to be able to do. As a result, I really believe that this kind of a bill ought to be considered there rather than here. And you don't hear me saying that kind of thing very often, because I like to make decisions myself.
I would. I know the Judiciary Committee is just swamped, and I would have to think this is going to go to a Senate Judiciary were it to pass. So it will get a review by Judish at some point. But tell me, if you will, what is the difference in procedure? If I understand it correctly, there is a difference in procedure between the appeals and the circuit court in terms of the evidence allowed. Could you tell us? I hope I didn't miss what you were saying before.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, under the present law, the circuit court hears cases sort of from the beginning as an original matter, and they take testimony and they develop their own record, make their decision, and then the Court of Appeals reviews on the circuit court's record. In contested case hearings, the administrative law judge makes the record, makes the proposed findings. Those are then reviewed and sometimes changed by the Environmental Quality Commission. Then the review goes to the circuit, or to the, excuse me, the Court of Appeals. It's even complicated for me. It goes to the Court of Appeals for review based upon that administrative record. If the two are put together, we obviously have two different records and two sets of findings, and then one has to guess, I guess, as to what the Court of Appeals would review and how.
Okay. All right. Any further? Yes.
Well, I think the chair's question, let me see if I can rephrase it. I think what the chair may have been asking is, are the standards for decision-making different in the administrative hearing than they would be in the circuit court than they would be in the Court of Appeals? The standard for being persuaded by the evidence is the same, is it not?
Virtually the same. There are some slight differences. The probably the one that's most significant is that in the administrative hearing, the evidentiary rules are more flexible and more liberal. And so we designed that way so it would be easier for people that are proceeding without an attorney. And it's also just a little more common sense. So the evidentiary rules are slightly different in the administrative procedures, in the administrative proceeding, the contested case hearing, than they would be in the circuit court proceeding. But I think that's really the only significant difference.
Thank you.
Are you aware of any other states that do it in the way that is being suggested?
No. I mean, I have no doubt that there probably are situations where you have extra layers of review. I, quite frankly, I don't know of them off the top of my head. And it's, I guess, the question of how many layers of review one has is really a policy issue. But my concern is making sure that it works well, and so it's the legal issues and how the procedure works that I can really talk to.
I was kind of distracted at one point. I heard you talking a little bit about the fact that the expenses in the appeals court are not significantly greater. Could you go over that?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I don't know that they are significantly different. And what I'm referring to is testimony that you actually heard in the first hearing, that the cost of hiring an attorney to prosecute a case in front of the Court of Appeals was significantly higher than the cost of hiring an attorney to prosecute a case in the circuit court. At least that's what I had understood to be presented to you. And I'm not aware of anything to support that, and I actually tried to find if there was anything that would indicate that that was the case. I wasn't able to locate it, and I think it's just some people feel that that's probably the case, but others feel that it might not be.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sir.
Yes.
One other question. If this bill were to become law, can the state appeal the circuit court decision if the circuit court decision is different from the administrative law judge's decision?
Representative,
the state appeal the circuit court decision?
Representative Jensen and Chair Anderson, yes, I believe they could.
So in part, it could be adding, if $10,000 is the figure, it could be adding another $10,000 to the plaintiff's financial burden.
Yes, I have to believe it. That to prosecute any case all the way to the end, it would add cost because you'd have an extra layer in there.
One other question. One other question. When these cases go to the Court of Appeals, is the Court of Appeals hearing evidence?
Well,
or just the testimony of the evidence?
Yeah, currently they don't. The contested case hearings don't go to the Court of Appeals, so I couldn't answer that. And I'm not sure what would happen under the proposal, but I assume that they would take have a hearing. A de novo hearing. In non-contested case orders, yes, the circuit court does take evidence. He has essentially a trial.
I'm talking about the appellate court.
The appellate court. Typically, the appellate court would make its decision based upon the record below in either case, either the record of the circuit court or the record of the that's developed in the administrative process.
And if there is no circuit court, as it is now,
mm-hmm.
It would make it on the evidence.
Make it on the, that's right, Vice Chair Jensen, on the evidence that was presented previously. I say this generally, there are limited abilities for the Court of Appeals to take new evidence, but they don't generally do that, and quite frankly, I'm not an expert on when they do and when they don't.
Good, thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Lebrun, didn't get a chance if you'd like to.
My name is Dave Lebrun. I'm an environmental law specialist with the Department of Environmental Quality. Plus Carlo presented both written and oral testimony to you previously. Our concerns with the bill remain. The Ash 1 amendments don't affect our main concerns, which is that we're concerned that the legal effects of this bill are unclear. Specifically, the bill would change the manner in which a person might appeal a permit decision. The Dash 1 affects that. However, it still creates a new additional level of appeal, eliminates DEQ contested hearings outright, or makes them moot or redundant. We testified previously that it adds a costly court proceeding to the contested case appeal process. We're concerned that it creates new costs and new involvement by the Department of Justice trial attorneys, adding to the burden to the regulated community. Finally, we're concerned that moving these cases to the county circuit courts, many of which already have clogged dockets, would result in delayed cases. As a result of these concerns, we still oppose this bill.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to recess the work session. Representative Garrard had said he would like to be present for the vote, so I will recess the work session on 2948, and we will take up temporarily H.R. 5. I was, I'll open a work session on House Resolution Number 5. We had in Josephine County a very fine representative a number of years ago. Cecil Johnson served in the late 70s until I think 81. And was a dairy farmer, a very solid guy, man of the earth, very well liked in our community. And he served for quite a span, 6-7 years or so, not long for Representative Justin, but maybe for some of the rest of us. And he had the distinction at one point where the legislature was actually pretty much owned by the Democratic side, and the Democratic chair of his agriculture committee was stricken with a heart attack and taken out. Didn't come back in 8 days like some people we know, but he didn't come back for quite a while, and kind of an unusual situation. The vice chair, Cecil Johnson, was appointed to be the chair for the interim and served well for the rest of the legislative session, as I understand. We had been asked by some folks around close to the family if we would run the memorial, and so or the resolution, and so this is as you see it. I'll just read it for you right now real quickly. Former member of the House of Representatives Cecil Johnson died January 8, 2005 at 87. He was a descendant of former judge, a state representative, and a state senator, William Johnson, who represented Josephine County from 1935 to 1937, first in the representatives and then in the Senate. Cecil Johnson was a graduate of Grants Pass High School in 36 and served in the National Guard, Oregon National Guard, through World War II. He was married to Arlene, who I think will be pleased to be with us if we carry this to the floor. And they were married for 65 years. When he was 17 years of age, he started a dairy with his family that grew to become Valley Road Guernsey Farms, and they did quite a bit of breeding, mainly with the Guernsey breed. Cecil served the people of Oregon as state representative for Josephine County from 75 to 81. He took a lead on agricultural issues, worked hard to protect family farms, and was a fierce proponent of property rights. And I can tell you that very, very well liked by the relatively rural community that Grants Pass was at that time. He served folks very, very well. Cecil was widely admired in the agricultural committee and community, and served as a chairperson of the State Board of Agriculture and as president of the Oregon Dairy Council and also the Oregon Dairymen's Association. And Cecil always believed that governance of the state is more important than partisan politics. That was nice to hear. And that the art of cooperation is also the art of statesmanship, and maintained an affable relationship with members of both parties while serving as our state representative. Be it therefore resolved that we, the members of the 73rd Legislative Assembly, mourn the passing of former representative state representative Cecil Johnson, extend our condolences to his family, and express our sincere appreciation for his honest hard work. His sense of fairness and his generous help to others without concern for recognition or recompense, and be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be presented basically to all of his family. I will accept a motion to move this to the House floor.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I move that House Resolution 5 be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, any objection? Any discussion? Hearing none, clerk will call and roll.
Representative Jessen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Lynn?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative
Barnhart? Excuse.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
Aye. And the motion has received a constitutional majority and is declared approved. I will carry this one gladly, happily, and That, I think, will stand at ease for a few moments. I'll close the work session on House Resolution Number 5, and we will stand at ease for a few moments. House Bill 2948, and I'll accept a motion, Representative Jensen.
Chair, I move that the committee pass
House Bill 2948
with a subsequent referral to the House Budget Committee with no recommendation.
Representative Jensen moves that House Bill 2948 be passed to the Budget Committee with no recommendation. Any objections?
No objection.
Any discussion? All right, will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Blaine?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Girard?
Excuse.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Chair Anderson?
Chair votes aye. The House Bill 2948 has passed with the Constitution as majority to the floor.
No.
To the Budget Committee. House Bill 2948 has passed to the Budget Committee with the constitutional majority. With that, I will adjourn our meeting. Thank you all for
Thank you, sir.
Patiently waiting. Thank you.